pseudo biology. This is a collection of statements from various papers. And in my group peptides, that is the peptide I'm going to talk about, is small, can be 15 amino acids, can be 40, something like that. Small anyway. It's a small protein, that's why they're called peptide. And do we have a they're found in '80s, and since then have been found in every plant and animal biologists look into it, and typically on the epithelial surface and the phagocyte itself as a weapon of first line defense. And this is a statement I'm sure from this paper from Bob Lehrer's. Despite this ancient lineage, antimicrobial became effective without no material resistance. And it's considered an important new kind of antibiotic that they supposed to function differently from penicillin and so on. This is supposed to have a picture in there, but somehow it disappeared. Okay, this is a picture I have stolen from Michael Dasgupta's paper, showing that the bacteria exposed to, I think it's McKinnon, and you see that cell membrane seem to be disintegrated. So this is one of many indications that these peptides are probably working on cell membrane rather than protein. And that issue, however, took, I would say, at least 10 years to settle. I think there was a great resistance to think that small peptides are working on lipid highlight rather than protein receptor. Yeah.
So does it just make calls? So there's membrane displays?
Well, that's what I'm going to talk about. So these are the characteristics from the bioassay. And this is the type of hint indicate that peptides are working on lipids rather than proteins. And they have wide spectrum activity, speed action is minutes, and it causes leakage, lysis, and if you make amino acids with the peptide with the amino acids, it has identical activity in the cell, so indicating the structure. Stereo structures are important and so forth. And there are a few belong to antimicrobial such as nisin, it's a very famous food preservative, which has receptors, but a lot of them don't, or at least people have not found them. So for this reason, that, and for this bacteria anyway, I'm going to assume that these peptides are working or a targeting lipid bilayer rather than protein. Okay, so my experiment would be with artificial membrane made of lipid bilayer. So these are the, again, from literature, the characteristic of bioassay. You cannot see this, this is on linear plot and in the micromolar range. In the the bioassay was done mostly, I think, on petri dish and so forth. But that's just for the sake of argument. Let's assume that you have bacteria in the test tube, in as a suspension. And you put this peptide into the suspension in the micromolar, below the micromolar range, nothing happened. And as soon as but then there seems to be a threshold. And above that, as concentration exceeds that threshold, the activity very quickly reaches saturation. Yeah. And this is a very important characteristic for the function of this peptide outcome. Because even though, you know, the first question one will ask if the peptide is acting on the divide is that then how come it doesn't attack the host cell? Well, they are, for most cases, there is a very simple answer. These peptides are very, positive charge. And bacteria surfaces a lot of negative charge, so they are attracted to bacteria cells. But the human cell, for example, have neutral surface, and they don't aggregate to the surface. However, if you increase the concentration by 100-fold, it would lyse red blood cell and animal cells with activity curve just like this. So this sometimes called all or none concentration dependence is the key for this function, because in this range it's very effective antibiotics, but it doesn't harm the animals.
Do people routinely measure the state of the peptide in the solution? I have some number. Like, is there any aggregation of these peptides in the solution?
I think in water solution, it depends on, okay. One thing I have to make clear is that
is it equivalent to a surfactant, right? Which you have universe.
In a way, the phenomena, I call that myself, you know, is very much like the surfactant.
So it also forms assemblies and
solutions? No, they are. Is it one problem of this field is that there are over 1,000 discoveries already. And very few are started by many independent laboratories, and one laboratory would report something and contradict the other, and so on and so forth. It's that's the problem, that somebody would suggest aggregation, somebody say no. Okay. But at least the kind of peptide I'm going to talk about, and I hope I have a list of the peptides I'm going to use, they don't form aggregate in the ionic solution, or at least in the normal ionic range, and when they are random coiled in the water, some of them are, and then when they bind to the metallic, they come to it. But it doesn't have to be here. We work with a letter that a beta sheet, delta kind of peptide, we found same effect, same kind of phenomenon. It doesn't have to be our use. So I'm going to first talk about this. Okay, let me go back. So what is this talk is going to be about? I'm going to talk about how do peptide give rise to this kind of behavior. Okay, that's the main goal of this talk. And so for that purpose, I'll try to describe some experiment which will give you some structural information of this phenomenon. And based on those structural information, I'll try to compose a free energy of this interaction. And I was under the impression that this is theory-oriented, so I'll at least try to suggest theoretical overall for discussion. Okay? That, for example, I didn't mention, but I show you on the right-hand side of bioassay that the leakage experiment. So if you, instead of bacteria or microorganism in the substrate, you use lipid vesicle, this peptide will cause leakage. And with this ratio, and then keep rise to maximum leakage as concentration exceeds the ratio. And very much like bioassay. And that's one of the evidence that people think that these peptides are working on the okay, one of the main pieces of evidence. But such experiments, though, give you for example, leakage, they can use large and small size molecule in there, and they found only the small one leak out. So you sort of have a measure of the size of the pore there. But they are pores, obviously, not got because they, the, at least in many cases, they keep the large molecule inside the vesicle. So we'll try to do experiment to see if we can detect and describe the pore. And we'll also measure the orientation of peptide in the membrane. And we also ask, what is the effect on the peptide caused by this difference? Okay. So what we have been doing is take the basic experiment. And this peptide, the experiment shown that they bind to the peptide. Once they bind, they're mostly, of course, it's an equilibrium between solution, monomer, and the lipid bound, but majority will be bound because of the hydrophobicity. Not because of electrostatic. Electrostatic just help them to attract to the surface, but then when they bind by hydrophobic interaction. You take this sample and remove most of the water and make the membrane into a toroid, you can do it. Okay. And the evidence is that if you look under polarized microscope, you can see large domain are perfectly aligned. This shiny line is due to this bifurcational defect called OH2, like this. Okay. But this domain is available. And we also want to emphasize, because this makes a lot of people uncomfortable, this kind of sample progression, we want to emphasize the result is consistent with experimental result from the vesicle, using vesicle. So,
excuse me, do you make the multi-layers from a vesicle system?
Yes, yes.
Can you say a little bit how you might do that?
Basically just dry it out.
Just
dry out the excessive water.
Okay.
Some there are tricks to make those peptides, but we check that method with other methods. They're all consistent. Some of the, like LPS, you cannot dissolve in organic solvent. You have to walk from the vesicle suspension. There's no other way to do it.
So just drying away the solvent, but do you have any solutes in the solution?
You use the same whatever used for the leakage experiment.
So when you dry the bilayer, you've got huge amounts of
Yeah, yeah, you got all kind of stuff in it.
Salt crystals and everything.
Crystal. Not
salt,
necessary.
Salt.
Yeah, 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 salt, yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know, I want to go into this. There's a way to do neutron experiment to see the pore. And the reason is this. X-ray and neutrons scattering is basically taking the Fourier transform of a real space structure. Okay. And you can align something called scattering vector parallel to the membrane. So you're essentially like looking up, looking parallel to the membrane. What do you see? Well, you can see pores if it has a contrast against its background. But for X-ray neutron, very little contrast. So what we do is that we just press S2O with D2O. And that can be done with a water D2O dish on the side. You exchange with H2O over an hour, 2 hours, whatever time. And then what you think that is, okay, suppose there are pores in the membrane. Then there's this D2O column going through the membrane. Okay. And so the neutron input scattering is seeing nothing but this water column diffusion in the two-dimensional plane. You don't eat against the background. So you get a curve like this, like this, if you use D2O, and the analysis of this curve is standard. Yes?
I'm just curious, what's your neutron?
like a wildfire on some wavelength, typical.
This is from a radioactive source?
A reactor.
Reactor.
Yeah. Yeah, there are neutron facilities, as I mentioned. Yeah. You can do this. So the curve is like this. You fit with the standard theory of scaling, which consists of form factor, out of water column, and the structure factor, which is supposed to be the Fourier transform of cell population of this position in the curve of this pole. Okay. So this Fourier transform, because we are doing it in plane, depends only on one number, that is the diameter of this water column. Only one number. This one, because we know the concentration, it depends only on the contact distance between the disk. So you can use the PC to simulate this. You just put the disk randomly on the 2D. Just build up the correlation to the Fourier transform. That's your SQ. Fourier transform, this F is just, as I said, the Fourier transform of a circle. Depends only on the radius. So you get two numbers, yes.
Is S consistent with the pores being fluid in the membrane?
Yes.
Okay, so they're
yeah.
not.
They are random, yes. Okay. Well, I mean, you have to
prove. They're not
prove.
Correlated. Okay.
They are correlated simply because there's a repulsion.
There's a distance.
They cannot occupy the same space. That is the only correlation you have. Okay? So you get two numbers, as I said. In this analysis, you get two numbers. For example, this peptide is called adenosine. I didn't mention the name of peptide because I assume that you're mathematician, so you don't care about the name of
peptide. No, we care.
Well, okay, then I'm sorry. I'll tell you the details after the talk, but the name is called adenosine. I mean, I have to speed it up.
Sorry, in your experiment you have multi-layers membrane, but how can you make sure this is peptide only work for one bilayer while not two?
No, they work on all bilayers. They are independent.
Okay.
You when they become correlated, we also know. That scattering and diffraction is very nice in telling you whether the all these multiple bilayers are related or not related.
Yeah,
okay.
I just want to be sure.
So, if you know the two number, for example, we know the diameter of the water going through this core. And the other is the contact distance between two. When they bump into each other, what is closest distance they can come to, and that's DC. And these two numbers are consistent with the model that everybody thinks that this peptide, or most of the peptide, will make a hole. That is, they line the hole. Okay. Everybody's cartoon of pore by proteins are always just lining the hole like a barrel. Okay. But we found that this is NN. So we propose that for our missing indeed, the model of the pore is this kind, and in fact, there's very, very good single ion conduction measurement, which strongly suggests that adenosine do make this kind of pore. Okay. For all other peptides, we have experiment at least 10, but three very extensively. That is meganin, melanin, prodigrin, and many others. We are aware of lot of peptides, but these are those three we experiment repeatedly. Okay. We found that these two numbers in this case varies from sample to sample. That's a well-defined number for each sample, but when you change the sample, they tend to vary. It doesn't stay with the same number. And also based on the concentration, they are large, for one thing. And remember, peptides are positive charge. They should not like to do this. And in fact, there's not enough peptides to make to line every pore, because these pores are long, okay? So we suggest that what happened here is that actually lipid itself bend over continuously to make the hole. And so this is head group, and Chen is inside here. They continuously line the whole pore, and the peptide are there just to decorate, maybe to stabilize the pore, maybe to reduce the free energy of pore formation, because there's a bending energy involved in this structure. Okay. These are cartoons. We suggest these are the cases, but we are right now doing some experiment trying to get a higher resolution structure of these things. So at least we have a way to detect poles, and it's not that always see it. Only the condition corresponds to leakage that you see this pole. Below the threshold, you don't see this. How about the peptide orientation? Now, the biochemists have many ways to measure peptide orientation in membrane, so it's the NR and so on and so forth. It's very important that you measure this in many, many, many different conditions. A lot of early controversy is because someone just measured one sample and another measured another sample, they don't have same result and they argue about. Well, we found that actually the orientation can change with sample condition. And I think that is the most interesting aspect of this peptide. So we have this, if you have a circular dichotomy machine, you can make this oriented sample and measure the orientation of each peptide in fiber. Okay. This technique, I'm not going to talk about it. We have been applied to helical, beta sheets, and cyclic peptide. This is how you use it. So you identify a spectrum. You identify a spectrum that with, this is a helical case. Helix is perpendicular membrane. And that spectrum helix parallel to the membrane. Very often you get a spectrum in between. And when that happened, we always found that it's a linear combination of two. So that you can say, this is because the peptide, certain percent of peptide in that state, certain percent of peptide in this state. So this example, we measure this spectrum with a series of peptide to lipid ratio. Okay? And you see the spectrum all in between, goes to the common point. And you can decompose and say, okay, this we found that below this ratio, all the peptides are helical peptide parallel to the membrane. But above this ratio, depend on lipid and depend on peptide as well, that increasing fraction of peptide becomes probably. So this nice technique we use here has another advantage. Because these samples are deposited on quartz, quartz break. Quartz break is transparent to neutral. So after we did this measurement, indeed that's what we do. After we did this measurement, we take it to a neutral facility. And we found that if the samples are prepared under this ratio, we don't see pore. And above this ratio, we see pore. So there's a correlation between two and two. And finally, I'll talk about this, the effect of peptide lipid bilayer, which you can, this time I have wave vector perpendicular to the stack of membrane and measure the electron density across the bilayer. So this is the result of series of peptide, the melanin in this lipid and melanin in this lipid, and just go through this experiment and measure the thickness, the phosphate and phosphate distance, and we found that this thickness linearly decreased with beta concentration up to a point, and then it seems as if it becomes plateau. No concentration, no thickness seems to change. And this, again, has we have trendy of this kind of growth. So, this is a summary of experimental results. We found that there seems to be a threshold that corresponds to this ratio, hopefully corresponds to this ratio of bioactivity. Below that, we found no poles, helical peptide parallel to the membrane. Now, I say we did beta sheet peptide. Now, our theory, there is no theory to relate the CD spectrum with orientation of beta sheets. However, there is a spectral change, just like helical peptide. Okay, so we can associate one spectrum of beta sheets to perhaps on the surface, one perhaps on the pole. We don't know the orientation of beta sheets. Helix, yes, we know. Okay. But the phenomena of helix and at least particular are really similar, parallel to each other. And the membrane thickness decreases linearly with concentration below the threshold. But once it reaches the threshold, above the threshold, we see a stable density of poles for even peptide lipid ratio. And that I say stable density because we see this neutron diffraction pattern. But we are not saying the poles are stable. Maybe poles are dynamic. Form and disappear, form and disappear, but the density is stable so that neutron curve is stable. And the fraction of peptide perpendicular to the bilayer increase with peptide to lipid ratio, and the membrane thickness constant, or at least more or less constant. So these are the basis for us to think about how do they interact to have the phenomena we just described. Okay. So let's think about the theory. What I'm going to give you is totally phenomenological, not deep theory, but I think that suggests formal for you guys to do. Yeah.
So you really don't have an investigator design on the orientation?
Say it again?
The orientation, parallel,
yes.
Parallel or perpendicular.
Yes,
the really direct data.
That those are direct data, and that's independent. Now, it reflects the spectrum is from the backbone of the
how do you get sending the membrane to the bilayer? How do you know parallel versus?
Because our membranes are oriented, right?
Oh,
because
the
membrane is right. Right. So the light is perpendicular to the membrane. And it's the orientation of helix with respect to the direction of light that gives you the different spectrum.
So did you show the A dependence? Did you show the A dependence on the C spectrum?
Yeah. Oops. Go back. Yeah, here. These are the angular dependence. So to prove that this spectrum, I just have no time. Okay, there is a spectrum supposed to be for helix in the direction of light, all perpendicular membrane. If you tilt the membrane, you see this spectrum change according to the angular dependence of circular factor.
And it's pretty clear that it's not a conformational difference, that the conformation
right.
changes with
there is no guarantee, but this is consistent with
okay.
no guarantee.
That's what you're trying to say.
Right.
Okay, you really can't separate those
no,
two effects
you can.
Out. Right.
You can also not separate from two populations from
exactly.
tilting angle.
Yeah.
Okay, but we think it's more likely. That's the assumption.
Excuse me, before you go into the model, can you just, I'd like to get a better sense of what the system is like. Can you go back to just the electron density profile?
Okay.
The last one, the one before.
But
how much water is associated with these membranes? What is the hydration state?
Hydration level is close to 100%.
Okay, but you don't have bulk water around.
We don't have bulk water. If you have bulk water, you don't have this data.
Right, and this is an equilibrium now with 6 molar salt. Because you dried it.
It depends on the samples. We didn't see a dependence on.
No, but you start with 100 millimolar salt, you dry it down, all the water goes, salt crystallizes at 6 molar.
That is not exactly the right way of describing it. We have the sample is surrounded by water, okay? So you sort of take it out. You take out this muddy layer and let it dry. So I don't think you keep all the ions in the sample.
I'm sure you have peptide. I'm sure you have lipid.
Yes.
I want to know how much water you may have. Other
right. The water. I cannot tell you the exact amount. Presumably you can do it because it's. I know the condition of equilibrium. So if you have a way to measure the amount of water, you can check.
What was the lipid that you?
Oh, too many to mention. I have done 30, 40, 50 different combinations.
Okay.
Not just once.
Okay.
And why? Because each peptide has this ratio depending on lipid composition.
Well, that's what I was saying. What is the hydrocarbon chain length and how does it match the hydrocarbon chain?
Right. Okay. So I'll come to that with a table. How about that?
Okay.
So let's do the phenomenal dosing. Okay. So we think that peptide is bound to the interface, and there are many independent data suggesting this is the case. Okay. And if it's bound to interface, there should be some kind of deformation. And we have very good experiment to show that lipid chain keep constant density. Okay, I cannot mention that, so just operation checks. So what happened here is deformation occur at constant chain density. So I'm going to show you that one thing about lipid bilayer is that we know its elastic property very, very well. And this is done by Helfrich, theory, Evans measurement. Basically, it's controlled by two elastic constants. One is the resistance to stretching. If you try to increase the area, there is an energy cost. It's like a piece of rock. And another is bending. Okay, these are very well established. And from that theory, you take two steps. You write your free energy, you write your Euler Lagrange equation, you can get a persistent depth. That is to say, if you disturb the lipid bilayer, like call the dimple, how far the dimple goes up, the deformation goes up. And that's persistent length. Okay. Now persistent length, depending on elastic constant, can be 20 angstrom, 30 angstrom. So it's peptide, beyond the peptide is the lipid bilayer because of this this deformation. Okay? So what happens if you have two of them on the lipid bilayer and this I think it's an excellent problem of theory. I did this on one dimension, I'm sure you can do it too. When two bilayer deform the membrane, how do they interact? They repair and then attract the membrane. at least qualitatively, this is true. So peptides do not aggregate on the membrane surface. And flat experiments, fluorescent energy transfer experiments support this.
What are the units? I mean, in terms of.
This is the unit is the persistence.
No, but the energy of what?
Depend on F1, the energy of deformation. Okay. So 2 means it corresponds to energy of 2 dimples. How about what if you put N allow them in the membrane? This is even harder problem, and I think it's an excellent theory for, right? How do they interact with each other? Well, in one dimension, you can solve exactly. And the most important thing is that in low concentration, that is to say, if the peptide, this dimple do not overlap with each other. So each of them is causing F1 energy, F1. So if we just N times F1, low concentration, that's reasonable. But in high concentration, when this dimple overlap, the energy becomes proportional to the concentration squared. This is very important. You can think of it this way. What happens when the peptide inserted in the face? It effectively increases the membrane area. You put something in, right? And that area, we call that as a P for each peptide. You stretch it. So you can ask, if there's no peptide, how much tension is required to stretch that much? And we call that signal. It's an equivalent tension, and there will be equivalent energy of stretching. So we believe that when the peptides are absorbed on the interface, the energy should be like so. This is only at high concentration. High concentration make energy expression simple because the overlap make the membrane thickness more or less uniform. If it's low concentration, there's dimple. But when it's high concentration, dimples sort of overlap and the thickness become more or less constant. Okay? When that happens, the energy of binding to the interface has this binding energy, of course. I mean, they have to be a binding energy. Otherwise, they don't bind. It's negative energy. However, importantly, it causes a positive energy. In other words, and it's also proportional to the square of the concentration. So chemical potential now increases with concentration. So why there's no pull? Because this energy so much lower than forming a pole. You just don't see it for practical purposes. You don't see it. But when the peptide concentration becomes high enough, you have to include the possibility that the pole formation energy becomes comparable to binding on the surface. Remember, on the surface, energy becomes higher and higher. So that even though the energy of pole formation is high, it may catch up eventually. So you have surface binding energy, you have pore formation energy, and then you include this remaining, these are the amount of peptide go to the pore, these are still on the surface, this cause thinning or stretching of the area. And we are going to allow the pore has effect on the membrane thickness. So I include this term with unknown constant beta in there. Okay. Now this very simple phenomenological free energy gives you the following result. If you minimize it with respect to fraction of peptide in the pole, you find that above the threshold, the thickness of membrane should be constant. Because the essentially what happened is that the surface has been surface, the peptide on the surface already fixed the tension at that particular value. Every excessive peptide that goes to the pole. And also the fraction of the peptide in the pole is inversely proportional to peptide concentration. Okay? So I say that we have many, many panels of this thickness measurement. They all show this plateau. And all this error bar is the error bar obtained from circular dichroism experiment, showing that begin to change orientation. So this threshold between these two experiments causes a more. And I say that if you plot the fraction of peptide in the pore as a function of 1 over PL, it should be linear. And so we did that here, 1 over PL, then indeed they all become straight up. So I think good approximation. The phenomenal recovery is in agreement with the experimental method. So these are some of our data. So this is by final DOPC, and this is 22 carbon mixed with 1 unsaturation and so on. Why do we pick this peculiar lipid composition? Because we want to experiment with a threshold within the range of, say, 1 to 200 to, say, 1 to 10. Okay, there are a lot of lipid composition, threshold will be much lower beyond the range of measurement. Or too high. It's very difficult to measure. So this is not randomly picked. Yes, it's randomly picked, but picked for the purpose that threshold is within the range of observation so that we can study this on both sides of the threshold, peptide to lipid ratio. All right, so we have, so for example, we don't do amazing DOPC because the threshold will be beyond the range of it. So I would like to have only one lipid body and all the peptide on this one lipid body, but this threshold just changed all the threshold. We have no control. Okay. So what I'm showing is that all the parameters in the free energy expression are measurable, are numbers. So, one thing, so we are saying that, okay, peptide is effectively stretching because it's increasing the area. We know in aspiration experiment, if you take a lipid vesicle without peptide, pure lipid vesicle, if you increase the tension, eventually you pop. And that tension is called rupture tension. Has been measured for many, many lipid pilots. We think that rupture starts with a pore and then rupture. Okay. And we are saying that the phenomenological theory is telling you the peptide is effectively stretching this membrane. Keep on stretching by higher and higher concentration at the threshold. Peptide concentration, the equivalent tension is causing the pore. Well, we know how to calculate this from all the experiments there. We compare with rupture tension. They are practical things. Okay, so this is the support of Vesicle experiment to our experiment. And this is yet another Vesicle experiment by Lango. We stolen this slide from the paper. You have this lipid vesicle sucked in by micropipette. This sucked in device was invented by Evan for the mummification of area. You can take the area change of the lipid body. That's the whole purpose. So you see that you started out with this. you expose two peptides, in this case I think it's melatonin, a low concentration, all they saw was area increase, volume did not increase. So that's consistent with what we said, peptide absorb the interface, stretch the membrane. Okay? But if you put in higher concentration, and here, it's very difficult to say how many are bound to it because it's in solution. Okay. But they can say low and high. At high concentration, you see this area stretching at the beginning, no volume change, but then volume begin to increase, and the volume begin to increase instead of decreases because they're experimental setup. If there are poles in the membrane, supposed to increase, and indeed it did. So indicating poles are now formed in this field. Again, consistent with our experiment.
Can you explain again why the volume would increase if pores form?
Because they use two different kind of sugars inside and outside.
Yeah, there's usually sucrose inside and glucose.
I don't know exactly what they did, but that the experiment was designed so that the small molecule can go in and large.
So you're saying that these channels now select for sucrose over glucose.
I cannot swear with the sugar, but something like
well,
that.
If they did what we did, which is these kind of experiments, we established them with Evans, then you make vesicles and sucrose, you spend them in glucose or salt solutions. And you're now saying that these channels have got the selectivity of sucrose over glucose and that osmotic flow of water. So glucose is going in, taking water with it.
Right.
Sucrose can't get out. Is that
That is more or less what they say. As I said, I don't remember exactly sucrose and glucose. They could have used something, but there. I give you this
yes.
paper. Okay, that's what they did. They used two different.
Well, is that consistent with the size of the channels that you think you have then? A sucrose molecule versus a glucose.
I did not check that.
Okay.
I did not check that. I don't know how the sucrose can go in, glucose can never. What is the size? I don't know how to estimate
it. Would be
because
glucose,
it's not sweet.
It would be glucose going in, taking water, and
right. Right. So you have to estimate how many water we say, right?
All right, well, no.
Okay, so what we are saying is this. Okay, the key is this area stretched by the peptide. Okay, and this AP is the area expand by each peptide is in our experiments directly measurable because from the slope of thinning, and we know the concentration of peptide, we can measure AP directly. Now, you want to think that AP is a side called closed section of peptide. That's the right. I mean, going there straight. But we found that AP is always smaller than the physical side of the physical cross section of the peptide. For example, you look at this. This, the melatonin cross section is supposed to be about 400 angstrom square. This is directly measured by, I think, David Eisenberg, the measurements from crystals. And the AP, however, we found is less than 400 from this range. Okay. And we say, how come? Does it make sense? Well, one way is to say maybe only part of peptide is embedded. That's a possibility. But more interestingly, it depends on lipid. And again, you can say that different lipid maybe it will give you different insertion and so forth. But I think what happened is that when the peptide comes to the interface, it kicks out some of the water molecule. There are water molecules in the headquarters. When you come in, you kick out water molecule. Suppose it's a pool of water, it comes in, kick out all the water. Then, of course, the membrane doesn't have to expand because peptide simply repress the water on the interface, right? But if you kick out only some, not the whole cross section of the peptide, then AP measure will be small than the physical size. So this comes to a very interesting question. There was a suggestion, for example, that many people believe there are other evidence. I have no time to mention, for example, the solid state NMR support, toroidal pole for McGann, for example. And people think, okay, suppose membrane form toroidal poles. Lipid monolayer is bent this way, so this kind of lipid with large head and small tail, we call this positive spontaneous curvature, would favor this kind of formula, or decrease. Favor means decrease its energy, okay? That's a suggestion. And indeed, there was such correlation. If you put in this type of lipid into your vesicle, the leakage threshold decreased. If you, however, put in this kind, small head, large head, the other way around. So this evidence has been used to support this model. Okay, so we examine Meriton in DOPC with additional lyso-PC, which has a large head, small chain, increasing amount. And also DOPE, small head, large chain, increasing amount. And we did find that threshold decreases from this side, increases that side. Because this small head means more water, so the AP is smaller. So if you need a higher concentration to stretch the membrane to the point of threshold. So that's the idea. However, you see that AP also changed accordingly. And furthermore, if you do the same experiment with artemisinin, which almost everybody agrees is not colloidable, rather it's barrel step form, you see the same thing. You see with, okay, with large head, the threshold decrease, and small head, threshold increase. Exactly like this. So since artemisinin probably doesn't make toroidal pore, this correlation actually does not support a toroidal model. Well, we say that the free energy has dependence on pore energy for sure. Okay? So if you put this kind of lipid in the vesicle, in the lipid composition, yeah, it might lower this energy and therefore influence the threshold. But it also change AP, the amount of stretching done by each peptide depends on whether you have small head, which has a lot of water associated with it. So when you come in, kick out a lot of water, or large head, which has little water, kick out very little water, so AP is bigger. Yeah.
This picture is a little bit deceptive anyway, because if you're plotting this cross section, you're suppressing the other curvature, which goes the other way.
I'm very aware of that the spontaneous curvature may, this picture alone doesn't tell you it's positive. Okay. But for a large enough pore, it is positive, because this way is this way. This way is always by the thickness, whereas when it's large, the radius increases.
So that tells you that it's actually depend on pore size.
Correct. But nobody knows how to control the pore size. Okay. So, So you have this as well. So which one? It could be either. I mean, we can't foretell whether the lipid, because this is a phenomenological theory. I don't know what is ES, what is EI, so forth. But we plot the threshold concentration in this formula obtained from free energy So as I said, it could be the influence of this pore energy which make this change, or could be the AP. We don't know this. We don't know how to calculate the pore energy change. We know this. We can measure this directly. So we plot the change of threshold against change of AP over L in this factor. And we found that it's almost 45 degrees. In other words, the change of threshold is almost entirely taken care of by the change of AP. So what happened to the pore formation energy? Well, the idea that peptide the right kind of lipid releasing the pore energy is the idea is that there is a bending energy, right? If you have spontaneous closure match it, then the bending energy will decrease. That's the idea. But maybe with a peptide in there, there's already no bending stress. That's why these peptides are very good in promoting. Oh, maybe. Okay, and that's, I try to hang with why it doesn't seem to affect the pore energy. Well, if you give me a few minutes, this is a theory program that for a primary manager maybe. We know a vesicle without peptide has this energy if you make a pore. And this has been studied by a particular French group, Brosia Weir. She collaborated with the Germans. It's very well established. Okay. There's a line tension which try to shrink the pore, and there's surface tension which try to tear it apart. Okay. And so this energy tells you that there's no stable radius. If you have a small pore, it shrinks. It seals itself. If it's too large, it just the rupture. Okay. So how come if we suggest peptide is stretching the membrane and creating this equivalent tension, how come it has a stable pore? So that's the question I want to ask. Well, we say that the tension is, equivalent tension is caused by this AP peptide bound to the interface. But above the threshold, some of the peptide goes to the pore, which leave the surface, so that is not stretching anymore, right? So when it form pore, it decreases the surface tension. And the number of peptide in the pore also is proportional to the radius. The larger radius, more peptide will be there. So if you plug in this, plug in that into this, you get a quadratic, cubic equation, with positive linear term, negative quadratic term, and positive cubic term. And you can plot this cube, it's a simple thing to do. You have a stable radius, okay? And well, just to show that this is not totally nonsense, we remember all these numbers have been measured. So we put in all these numbers, and you come up stable radius in the range of 10 out of 10. At least it's the same range of measurement. Okay, so I don't know if this a good argument or not, but that's our argument why peptide forms stable pores. And let me give a summary. Okay, so we understand the origin of Golgi theory in terms of elastic property. And peptide binding incur a positive energy thermal elastic deformation, which is long range. And peptide-peptide interaction occur when the deformation by individual peptide overlap. And this is a complicated interaction. However, when the PET concentration is high enough, the local deformation overlap resulting in a uniform membrane thinning, theory becomes simple. And we can explain the data in this domain. Elastic energy of thinning, which is quadratic PL, is a driving force for peptide transition from interface binding to pore formation. Mechanism for toroidal pore and barostar pore are the same. It's not, people often say there are two mechanisms. One is barostar mechanism, one is toroidal mechanism. We don't agree. There's only one mechanism. It's just pore energy is different for two types of configuration. But we don't know the structure of this pore, so we are trying to get that high resolution structure so that we can estimate the energy. And finally, the lipid dependence or some of the lipid dependence and peptide dependence can be understood in terms of AP, DS, and the pore formation. And very importantly, this was done more than 10 years. We have many graduate students went through my lab. An important collaborator, Bob Leder, I'm waiting here, and a group in Taiwan are also doing this experiment, and Chen, Li, and Hong, and David Worcester of University of Missouri, who sometimes did neutron experiment with us, and Lin Yang did X-ray experiment with us. Without generous support from a through company, we would not be able to report this result. We use more than 1 gram of magnesium, and they are free from just that. And support by federal government, of course, and the private foundation, highly appreciated. Thank you.